In August 1998, President George H.W. Bush called and invited me to spend time with him and Mrs. Barbara Bush in Maine. I had become close to President Bush in the years after I'd served as his Soviet specialist in the National Security Council, and they had hosted me a few times before at their wonderful family home in Kennebunkport. The weathered, shingle-style house, decorated in calming pastel chintz, has an elegant yet understated decor and a spectacular view of the ocean. I'm not all that fond of being in the water, but I love to look at it. And there isn't a prettier place to view the Atlantic than Walker's Point. I promptly accepted the invitation. Driving along the rocky New England coast to the entrance of the property, I was struck by two flags flying over the compound, the Texas state flag for the governor and the Stars and Stripes for the former president. The Florida state flag would later join them when Jeb Bush was elected governor. It was a subtle reminder that this was no ordinary family, and it would be no ordinary weekend. The elder Bush didn't hide his desire to get me together with his son George just so we could get to know each other better and talk a little about foreign policy. Before a casual lobster dinner that night, I joined Governor Bush on the back porch, where he told me that he was confident of re-election in November and that if he won impressively, which he fully expected, he'd likely run for the presidency. A run for the White House by the Texas governor struck me as having long odds for success. President Clinton's years had been morally tarnished, but peaceful and relatively prosperous. The governor was untested and would likely face a real pro in Vice President Al Gore. I was too polite to say those things that night, but I sure thought them. Throughout the weekend, while fishing, he fished, I sat in the boat and watched, or exercising side by side in the small family gym on the compound, we talked about Russia, China, and Latin America. He wanted to start thinking about what to do in foreign policy if he got elected. I soon realized that he knew our southern neighbors, particularly Mexico, far better than I did. I made a mental note to read a few articles about Mexico when I got back home to California. But we also talked about other things. He was interested in my upbringing in segregated Birmingham. I was attracted to his passion for improving education for disadvantaged youth. We compared notes on the problems of college admission and affirmative action. I was more traditional in my support of race-based admission. He tried to increase diversity at the University of Texas by other means. He proudly said that he would likely receive half of the Hispanic vote and more than a quarter of the African-American vote. I liked him. He was funny and irreverent, but serious about policy. We emailed back and forth several times during the fall, mostly friendly chit-chat about whatever was in the news, the growing conflict in the Balkans or the Clinton administration's efforts to expand NATO. Then, a couple of days after the November election and the landslide victory Governor Bush had hoped for, I received a note from him. He wanted to follow international events more closely. Early in March 1999, Karl Rove, the governor's political advisor, called to ask if I'd come down to Austin and speak with the governor about the upcoming campaign. "Will you book a hotel room for me?" I asked. "You won't need a hotel," he replied. "The governor wants you to stay at the residence." It was a signal that he expected me to support his campaign, which was quickly becoming a serious endeavor. A few weeks later, when my picture appeared on the front page of the New York Times as a member of the Exploratory Committee, dedicated to electing George W. Bush President of the United States, I was momentarily stunned by the sudden exposure, but committed to the cause. My father was the first person I called after the governor asked me to join his campaign. John Wesley Rice, Jr. loved politics. He watched news shows, particularly C-SPAN, for hours at a time, and had been a loyal Republican ever since a clerk affiliated with the Grand Ole Party had helped him register to vote in segregated Alabama. My father could barely contain his excitement. The campaign itself proved professionally fulfilling, but early on I realized that it would require my full-time focus. For 6 years, I had been the provost, the chief operating officer of Stanford University. I was ready to step down independent of the chance to join the Bush campaign. Foreign policy would be the governor's Achilles heel against more seasoned candidates in the primaries, and eventually in the general election. I knew that George W. Bush would look to me to help answer the inevitable questions about his readiness to assume the mantle of Commander-in-Chief.